banana, banana, not a banana, para banana, para para banana, para banana, para para banana, flock a banana and banana by the each.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, February 10th. Happy hump day to everyone. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling this morning with the Bassmaster, ripping them lips, Trey Kirby.
Heyo!
Hey, yo!
Oh, we got the international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
Lee. And last but not least, making the magic happen, is J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. You glorious bastards did it. Yesterday, I threatened to cancel the NBA Happy Hour watch party on Thursday unless we hit our goal of hitting 30,000 subscribers. Turns out that works, guys. Just a little threat to take something away that people like got us to 30K in no time. So thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody that has subscribed. Continue to like and comment and share the show. And of course, if you haven't, subscribe. Happy hour is a go, okay? It's not going anywhere. Yeah, it's here on Thursday night. Once again, we'll fire up the live stream around halftime of the Heat Rockets game on TNT. We've got another special guest in store. Okay, look. Let's just jump the gun here. We're not going 4.5 hours this Thursday.
5.5 hours.
No.
Extra long.
So I'm basically saying this happy hour will in no way be as good as last week's happy hour, but that's just the way it is, okay? Sometimes, yeah, we make classics every day, but that was like legendary that last Thursday marathon with Matty O and Trey making eggs and Lee sitting in the dark for an hour and a half. Like, it's a wild ride. Go back and watch it. Some people said they've watched it twice, which is crazy to me, but it was a lot of fun.
I've tapped in a couple of times just looking for little moments, and you know, you click along on the timeline, and every time it pops to a different moment, I'm having a laugh. Don't remember a single thing that was said during the time, but laughing when I see it back. I like the people who say they're saving their subscriptions for the push to 50K, they're like, okay, I see you guys going for 30. I'll subscribe when you're going for 50. Guess what? It's like the NBA. If you score in the first half, it still counts at the end. Mm. We're on the way to 50. Get them in.
Yeah. What were we going to say, Lili?
I think this time I'm not going to take my power cord with my computer. So when the battery runs out of my computer, that's it. I'm gone. I couldn't leave last week. I couldn't leave. It's unbelievable. It was actually a whole lot of fun there. And seeing Big Matty O back on our screen, wasn't that great? Wasn't it like a throwback?
Oh. In rare form. As you said, he had the perfect amount of complaints. He had great energy. We were obviously catching up with him. Yeah, it was great. We had so much fun. We obviously had fun. We went for 4.5 hours. It's insane. I can't believe we did it.
I don't know, Skeets. I think we're going to do it again. We're going to go for 4 hours again.
You might.
The scenes here. We got another West Coast guest coming on. Stay up late on the West Coast. It's not late for them. 1 in the morning. That's 9 o'clock. That's primetime hours, baby. So 4 hours? It's in the cards.
No, I don't know. We will see. We'll have some fun. And if you've never joined us for a happy hour watch party, it's not really a watch party. It's just a hang. We just have a blast. But you guys get your questions in, and we get up to some silly stuff. So join us Thursday night. Okay, email us your questions and comments for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. We're stepping on the beach later today at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, if you want to join us live on YouTube for that. But email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. No Dunks merch always available for sale over at nodunks.com. And before we get into it here, I just wanted to tell the Utah Jazz fans that we are going to talk about your team later today on Beach Steppin'. We got a great question about the Jazz, okay? Look, they've won 16-17, another really nice victory last night. Donovan Mitchell continuing to impress. We will not really get into them on today's show. So just chill out. That's a Skeets guarantee, though. We're talking about them on the beach. What were you
going
to say, Lee?
Well, I'm actually going on a Utah Jazz pod tomorrow, the official Utah Jazz team pod. So, I can't wait to talk a little jazz with my jazz friends.
Okay.
I'm Lee Ellis, and these are the 5 jazz songs I desire.
Only on SiriusXM. Okay, so yes.
No, I went looking for Lee's U2 Desire thing, and it expired. It's gone. Yeah. So Lee and I were scouring the internet and Sirius satellite, and it's just not there. So huge bummer. I was going to make a cold open or a top 5 out of it or something, but couldn't find it.
Yeah, I even downloaded it myself, but apparently that gets wiped as well from the Sirius app. I thought downloading it was like, okay, you can keep that in your own, you know, your memory, your storage, but nah. So anyway.
Maybe Dickie has it in a spare bedroom. all right, let's get to some of last night's action. We're actually going to be doing this today with a little true or false, guys. Joel Embiid, 25 points, 17 boards, season high 6 assists, and helped the 76ers crank up their defensive intensity in the fourth quarter to beat the Kings 119-111 last night. After the game, Worldwide Wob tweeted, "The fast approaching LeBron versus Embiid MVP debate is going to stress test many relationships." So, true or false, Trey, we'll go to you first. True or false, if the season ended today, I don't want to do any of that like, well, if he stays healthy and if he plays this many games, today, season's a wrap, Joel Embiid would deserve MVP. True or false?
I know we're doing true or false here, Skeets, but you can lock it in. Yes, this is true for me, as me and my close personal friend Shaquille O'Neal like to say, the big man is back! Or as he says it, the big man is back. Look at our main MVP candidates from like a week ago. LeBron, still a great choice. If you want to pick LeBron as the MVP, it's hard to argue. I mean, he's playing one quarter of basketball, and it's the best quarter that anybody plays every single night. If you want to pick him as your MVP, fair enough. I'm not going to argue with you on that one. Nikola Jokic, he's still balling. He was high on our MVP lists, but the team is struggling a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Same with Kevin Durant. But you look at the 76ers and you look at Joel Embiid, they're not struggling. They look like the best team in the Eastern Conference so far. They beat the Kings last night. The Kings came in pretty hot. A level up in competition, however, and you could see the full display from Joel Embiid in the fourth quarter there. 10 points, 6 rebounds, an assist, a steal, a block, 25-17, 6 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks on the night. And I just love how Doc Rivers is using him this year. He's still a load in the post, but his face-up game looks a lot better right now. He catches the ball in better spots this season, I think. He gets the ball in the mid-post a lot more now. There's cutters running around him. He's doing dribble handoffs. He's a more willing passer. I think he's a better passer right now. And it allows him to attack a moving defense rather than playing under Brett Brown, where it seemed like every perimeter touch Embiid would get would be at the top of the key. And it would be maybe he's going to settle for a three-pointer. Maybe he's going to give you that slow pump fake and work his way to the free throw line. But now he's catching the ball at the mid-post, and he's been on fire from mid-range so far. You saw it last night with a little fall-away jumper. He's shooting over, I think he's shooting over 50% from the mid-range so far. He's shooting threes less often. He's shooting them at a higher percentage. There's not been much defensive player of the year buzz for Joel Embiid so far, but they're third in defense. It's just been tiny tweaks to Joel Embiid's game so far this season from Doc Rivers and the Sixers, but it's working out. This is like the idealized Joel Embiid we're seeing here. He's taking care of the ball. I like what I see. It feels like he's part of a team right now. It feels like they put the right team around him. He's the MVP so far for me, a quarter of the way into the season.
Agree or disagree, Lee?
I disagree, but he's making an absolutely strong case, and he's clearly having his best season by far. He's playing in control. He's understanding what his strengths are. He's understanding when he has physical advantages against his matchups, and he's taking advantage of those. He's pulled the three-pointer in a little bit. He's got to the free throw line a little bit more, shooting the ball better, being a team leader out on the floor. His team is winning. So all those ingredients are coming together for him.
Sounds like an MVP to me, man.
No, look, he could win it. There's no question he has a strong, strong case. I still have LeBron as my ultimate MVP for this season. I think just over the entire, you know, what, 20-odd games into the season, I have LeBron.
LeBron's played 25, and Embiid has played 20. Maybe you do hold that against Joel Embiid.
I don't hold it against him. And in fact, I will say, though, the resilience Embiid has shown largely this season, because it was actually against LeBron where he had his nasty fall and he got up and he kept playing. Mm. And I don't believe he missed a game from that incident at all. There's no doubt that he's impressing me a lot. And whether that's a combination of him just maturing and understanding his game and Doc Rivers coming in there and saying, listen, you can dominate these guys. You can bully these guys underneath. I think it's a combination of those factors, but it's translating into wins. And he has made himself an incredibly valuable and dominant player. Mm-hmm. I still just have LeBron slightly ahead of him, but not the way that I had him whenever we did our first month awards a few weeks ago, where I thought LeBron and there's no real challenger there. Embiid is making that case hard. But as you said, Skeets, you didn't want to make this project this out over the course
right
of the season. Yeah. So right now, I think he's clearly the second favorite for MVP. If I was casting a vote, I'd have LeBron 1, and Joel Embiid, but I've been very, very impressed with the way that his game has grown in so many factors, not just the numbers. You know, it's the leadership, it's the domination of smaller opponents. It's when he looks like a little Shaq, where it's like, these guys are tiny. They can't even stop me at all. I can just use my size. But also not picking up just silly offensive fouls and just like shoving guys out the way. Basically using his agility and mobility to get inside and just create either high percentage looks around the rim or just that mid-ranger, which feels very, very strong right now in his game. So I've been super impressed with him, but I still ultimately have LeBron as the league's MVP so far.
Fair enough. I think Embiid is definitely in better condition than he has been in years prior. Because usually, like these sort of performances from Embiid, you'd see a lot of the time in first halves, maybe three quarters. And then as the game would go on, he would trail off. And I think a lot of it was fatigue setting in years prior. Not so much this year. I mean, he's super aggressive still in the fourth. I love that he's guaranteed almost at the line. He shoots a great percentage for especially a big guy. He attacks, keeps putting the pressure on it. And he's at the point with the 25-17-6 last night versus obviously a hot Kings team. And I would say he didn't even play that great a game. You know, like we're at that point with him, which is something special when he's putting up those type of numbers. And I'm like, that's not even top five Embiid game probably from this season. Like that's how elite he's been. I think right now, if I had a vote and it was over, it was wrapped up, I would go with Joel Embiid. And I think what you said, Trey, is important about the defense too. I wonder if LeBron's narrative continues and what he's doing at his age and the wins they're putting up in LA, and he gets MVP over Embiid, would there be some sort of consolation votes for Embiid for Defensive Player of the Year? Because I'm with you. I feel like he's going a little under the radar, his impact on that, and I think we saw it even in last night's game. So I wonder if that's in play. You know, there's obviously Gobert always in the mix, Anthony Davis and stuff like that, but I think there could be something there. I don't know if you agree or disagree.
Well, I think that one is Rudy Gobert's to lose at this point in the game. I know we're not supposed to talk about them until the second question of the second show on the day, or third show, technically. But I think that Gobert is the guy for Defensive Player of the Year right now because of how well the Jazz are playing and how great they've been on the defensive end. And you're honestly going to give Rudy Gobert a little bit of credit for being an offensive player in this Defensive Player of the Year vote, which is kind of the reverse of what you're saying with Joel Embiid. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the mix. He's obviously one of the best rim protectors in the league. He's still effective on switches, and the Sixers are a solid defensive team. It was Matisse Thybulle yesterday, though, who was the defensive mastermind shutting down De'Aaron Fox in the fourth quarter. Maybe that you see those kind of lockdown defense performances from Matisse Thybulle, and that's why other teams are interested in a guy like him coming back in trade packages. A little showcase there, because the Sixers can still get better, I think, heading into the postseason once we get a little bit closer, heading into the trade deadline here. Wouldn't be surprised to see them be active, but the start so far has been excellent. Everybody thought they were going to look a lot better with Doc Rivers coaching, with the new pieces that they brought in. They brought in offensive guys, it seemed like, but the defense has not fallen off, and that's largely because of Embiid.
And by the way, Sixers GM Daryl Morey responded to World Wide Wob's tweet with debate, question mark. So yeah, he's going to bat for his guys. Daryl Morey loves nothing more than his guys to win MVP in the regular season. Let's hope it goes a little bit better for Embiid and the Sixers moving into the playoffs. Anything else to add there, Lele?
Yeah, well, I've got a question here from the stream team from Greg. Big day for Greg's yesterday. They're following it up today here. What about Joel Embiid for Most Improved Player Award?
No, what about LeBron? He's added a three-point shot.
I love it.
But, I mean, in terms of consolation awards, you know, if Joel can't sway enough voters, I mean, maybe people sort of give him that one because, you know, we know this one doesn't usually go to an already elite player. But I think based on, again, what we've seen so far, he has improved his game across the board for me. So, you know, I think he fits
the
criteria.
But he's not in the running for most.
No, he's not. No.
Nor is LeBron. I mean, I think Jeremy Grant is actually running away with that award. But all right, let's keep it going. That shot was Jordan-esque. That's what Warriors coach Steve Kerr said post-game in San Antonio last night. Kerr, of course, was referring to this circus layup Steph Curry made in the final minutes of the first quarter in the Warriors' win versus the Spurs. Kerr again, I saw Jordan make that move many times. Go to the rim, get fouled, and just kick, kind of flick it backwards. Yeah, you see it here for those of us joining us on the stream team. For those listening, Curry drove the lane. The Spurs sort of collapsed on him. Good defense. Curry spun midair to kick the pass sort of back out maybe to the corner, but he changed his mind and then hit the shot blindly. So true or false, Lee? Oh, actually, we'll go to you again, Trey. Sorry. True or false, this Steph Curry shot was Jordan-esque. You're the Bulls fan here. What do you think?
Oh, come on, Skeets. It's true. I'm going to disagree with Steve Kerr, who saw it up close and personal both times. But this did have the qualities that make a Jordan layup incredible, because it's mind-blowing at full speed. You see Curry do it, and he almost stops in midair when he does the old flip backwards. It feels like his legs stop moving, throws it up. But the thing is, once you see it in slow motion, it's majestic. The artistry of the finish is very Jordan-esque as well. You got to see it both ways. You got to see it fast. You got to see it slow so that you can understand actually what's happening and how the players experienced it too, because they don't get to see it in slow motion, even though Lonnie Walker's saying, hey, man, I didn't touch him at all. And that didn't look like a foul on Lonnie Walker. Right. Maybe it was on somebody else. But that was an incredible finish by Steph Curry. He's playing MVP basketball. We didn't bring him up at all talking about Embiid. It just feels like the Warriors are a little bit behind some of these top teams like the Lakers and the Sixers. So he's not getting much MVP buzz. It's starting to pick up right now. We've obviously seen him have a 62-point game, a 57-point game, this incredible finish. The highlights are still there. He's playing as well as he has ever played. It's just that the Warriors aren't quite as good as the Warriors used to be. Curry, though, those kind of shots are not a surprise when it comes from him. Mm. It's called Jordan-esque because it wasn't a surprise when Michael Jordan made him either. Mm. Incredible skills.
What do you think, Lee? True or false?
Yeah, it's true. He's got such soft hands there. It was almost like he was going to pass it and he heard the whistle and he thought, well, I may as well just let go of it and see if I can knock it in. And it does go in. I mean, it just, the way that it just spins off the backboard there like that is incredible. Those two games down in San Antonio, he had so many little highlights, whether it was that or hitting those threes and dropping his defenders. He had one on Rudy Gay last night where Rudy Gay just kind of gave up and was almost like, did you have to do that to me, Steph? And Steph knocked in the jump shot. So, yeah, I agree. I think if the Warriors had a few more wins, his name would absolutely be in the MVP conversation. Probably should be anyway. It just sort of feels like he's not quite in that same bracket, though, as LeBron and Embiid and maybe Jokic if he's still in there at number three. But, yeah, he's playing as fun basketball as he's ever played. It's so good to watch him out there playing. He and Draymond Green have got a great connection there. So I just hope the Warriors can pick up a few more wins and turn this season into something for Steph rather than just a great season where he's going to score a lot and have some highlights, but maybe they don't finish all that high in the Western standings.
You guys are right, though. If Jokic is in the mix here, his team is basically the same as the Warriors right now, right? Denver 12-11, Warriors 13-12, so Curry should be there. I mean, the donk is usually in these conversations. Mavericks are 11-14 for crying out loud. So why not Curry? He should be at the table. He's in the conversation.
Ah, let's start that. Yeah. How many seats at the table?
Hell of a shot. Definitely true on the Jordan-like layup. Just go watch some Jordan YouTube highlights today too, but not the dunks. Just watch the layup package. It's still so much fun. Next one here. The Nets fell to 14-12 after the best worst team in the league, the Detroit Pistons. That's right, you heard me. They only beat the good teams. They beat them 122-111 last night. Brooklyn's third loss in a row. After the game, Nets point guard Kyrie Irving told reporters that the team looks, quote, very average at the moment. So true or false? Lee, you get it started this time. The Nets are average, and they should not be considered title favorites. And I'll add to that, Tash should just go ahead and give me the $100 right now because this Nets team, this average Nets team, is not going to the finals. What do you think?
Well, it's false because they have a fairly significant piece not playing at the moment. He's out with coronavirus protocols, and that's Kevin Durant. And when Kevin Durant's on this team, I think they are the best team in the Eastern Conference. When he's not on that team, I think, yeah, they are maybe third or fourth best team because I think he makes that much of a difference to them, not just the way he plays, but his sort of control and his leadership out there on the floor. And last night, I think, was a good example because there's a few videos going around, a few clips of a little bit of infighting, a little bit of bickering there between James Harden and DeAndre Jordan, sort of pointing the finger and questioning their defensive effort because it was only... Well, it was only last week, I guess it was, when it was the Clippers and the Nets, and I thought the Nets had one of their best defensive performances because they put the effort in, but it wasn't there last night, and the Pistons really took advantage. I thought Blake Griffin was excellent, actually, again last night, really using his size advantage down low, but the Nets need Kevin Durant out there just to keep things from really falling apart because otherwise this Nets team could be a little bit like the Clippers were down in the bubble. If things don't go well for them, you can kind of see it being a little bit of a combustible situation there. So, you know, Durant's not with the team at the moment. He's expected to join them to play again on Friday when he clears protocols and they can't get him back quick enough. Because I think they've lost three in a row now.
Yep.
But yeah, when Kevin Durant's out on the court, The Nets, I think, can beat anyone, including the Bucks, who's probably the best team outside of the Nets when Kevin Durant does play. But when he's not there, it's a tough thing. And Steve Nash also had some comments after the game as well, just saying, listen, we've got to bring it every night. It doesn't matter who we're playing. We're playing NBA competition, but they didn't have it last night. And that was a very impressive win from the Detroit Pistons, pretty much in control of the game from the start, too.
Yeah. What do you think, Trey? True or false? Are the Nets, you know, with what we're seeing here, without KD, as Lee points out, true or false, they should not be considered title favorites?
Title favorites, I don't think they're title favorites. I still would maybe have them as Eastern Conference champions. Favorites, I don't know. That's a tough call because, like you're saying, Lee, it's a very strange situation when Kevin Durant, maybe a top two offensive player in the league, is the most important defensive player for the Nets. But when he's out there, it doesn't look like they can get any stops. But like you said, Lee, they look great against the Clippers. Here's the difference. The Pistons are terrible. The Clippers are good. So the Nets try and flip the switch. The difference with the Nets flipping the switch and the Lakers flipping the switch is that when the Nets flip it, they can't get a stop every single time down the court. Whereas the Lakers, that's kind of what they've built their identity on. They've got great offensive players, obviously, in LeBron and Anthony Davis, guys who can score at the hoop every single time when it comes down to it in the playoffs, but they also get stops every single time that they need to, which is why they're able to flip the switch in the fourth quarter. The Nets definitely try to be a switch-flipping team, but they don't have the defensive talent, they don't have the rebounding, they don't have the communication, really, and the continuity to do it as effectively as the Lakers do. I'm not super concerned about them. I think they're going to be terrible against every team they play against that's under 500, and I think they're going to be looking great on every national TV game against a team that's over 500. Lucky for them, in the playoffs, every game is on national TV.
Hmm. Yeah, we'll see. Did you see the clip that I know Schumann shared out last night where DeAndre Jordan just stopped playing defense, like literally mid-play, just sort of like, okay, I guess he's around me. I'll literally just put my hands down and behind my back. So very I will not cool. get the foul. I will just give up the layup instead. That was weird. But yeah, I mean, you said it, Harden sort of and him getting into it a little bit, at least like, what's going on here defensively? Like, what are we doing here? And I'm sure it's like, oh, stay in front of your man. Well, where's the help? Like, where are you? Like, and all this. Like, you know, the losses start piling up. That's what happens, right, Lily?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And again, I think without Durant's presence there, they're just a little bit lost. He's almost like the father of the team out there, you know, where things aren't going to get a little bit too crazy. But it's more to do with the fact that, you know, when this team has some good wins and they look like they're rolling. And again, every team is going to be missing players, star players from time to time. That's never an excuse to just say, well, it's okay if we lose these games. They still had Harden. They still had Kyrie. Right. They're as healthy as ever. You know, they're virtually impossible to stop themselves going forward against a Pistons team that isn't a great defensive team. But again, I felt that the Pistons, they were just in control of this game. And that's the concern, I think, for Steve Nash is that, you know, is Harden or Kyrie, one of those guys, going to sort of fill those leadership boots when Kevin Durant is out? And it didn't happen last night.
Well, don't play in boots. That's going to slow you down. No wonder you're slow defensively out there. All right, next one. The Heat beat the Knicks 98-96. That was the final score to finish off a sweep of a home-and-home series. It wasn't pretty, but it was nostalgic, maybe. After the game, Heat coach Eric Spoelstra said, quote, "This was more of a throwback Miami-New York game from the 90s, where there weren't a lot of open shots in the last 14 to 16 minutes of the game. You were just going to have to grind out a win," end quote. RJ Barrett had a chance to tie it on the final play, but his layup bounced a little high off the rim. He didn't get it quite in the box there. You know, Jimmy was challenging, and so the Heat got the victory. But true or false, Trey, last night's Knicks-Heat game made you miss 90s basketball.
This is a falsie. This one's a false for sure. Come on, this wasn't 90s basketball. Look at what these teams were wearing. You got one team in a half and half gradient jersey. You got the other one with the tie-dye running down the sides. It's even harder to miss the 90s if you're a Bulls fan and you see Jimmy Butler versus Derrick Rose, but somehow it's Knicks versus Heat. Ugh, my heart. That being said, 98-96 Heat over the Knicks. That looks 90s. Yep. Both teams hitting double-digit threes, though. That's not 90s. Nice game for Kelly Olynyk. 20 points, 6 threes. We did see a few post-ups. Jimmy Butler had one. That's a 90s move. Like guard posting up. Love it. Julius Randle was posting up a little bit. But I saw zero Georgetown centers shooting hook shots. If you're talking about Knicks versus Heat, it's either going to be Patrick Ewing or Alonzo Mourning taking 15 steps across the lane, throwing up a hook shot that somehow goes in. Every single Georgetown center had it back in the day, and I saw none of that last night. But the way I knew this was not 90s basketball, Hard foul at the end of the game there. Jimmy Butler goes down, but rather than getting up and fighting the New York Knicks, Jimmy Butler acted like he was hurt. He was doing a bit. He was trying to get a flagrant foul out of this. Peeking out of one eye to make sure that the refs weren't looking. Hey, am I still hurt? Am I still hurt? If this was the 90s, Jimmy Butler would have been throwing bows. Nick, we would have seen Eric Spoelstra hanging off of somebody's leg. Come on, this is not 90s basketball. This was just an ugly, ugly game, but a nice win for the Heat.
Yeah, yeah. The Knicks scored just 14 in the fourth quarter, Lee. Tibbs was actually pissed with the free throw difference. Miami shot a lot of them, 39, I think, in the game. Knicks only had 16, and it was really bad in the fourth quarter, 13-2 for the Miami Heat. But was this reminiscent of 90s basketball to you? Did it make you miss the 90s?
Well, I took a similar angle as Trey there. I thought more about the visuals, and I thought, can you imagine Charles Oakley if he saw on the other team Alonzo Mourning or Larry Johnson wearing those uniforms? I mean, imagine what he would say pre-game, post-game, and then again, as you point out with the Jimmy Butler, imagine Charles Oakley was the one who kind of got into it there with Jimmy Butler, and he's rolling on the ground trying to, like, fool the refs. Imagine Oakley after the game, but also just Alonzo Mourning in those tie-dye uniforms. It just, just doesn't feel right. But in terms of a grinded out at the end of the game there, you know, a tight game, only a one or two possession game really, at the end, and the Heat pull out the victory. That, to me, felt like 90s basketball, just like a tough, tough, dirty, grimy win, exactly what the Heat needed against their rivals, who they're in a playoff race with as well. So there was some of those elements there, and you had two guys who took at least 15 free throws, too, from the Heat and Butler Adebayo. So there were a ton of whistles, and you know as well that if Pat Riley was on the Knicks still, you know, there would have been some, they're getting their home cooking down there in Miami, you know, wait till they come back up to New York and we get the referees on our side. So, yeah, it was an important couple of wins here for the Heat. In fact, three in a row now. Yeah. Yep. Just doing what they need to do. Just get those W's, build them up. And now I think they're only a game back of the Knicks, actually.
Here they come.
In the standings. So, yeah. It's fun, though. It's fun when you can sort of look back at a score where both teams fail to score 100, because it doesn't happen all that often these days.
No, it does not. You know it's not the 90s, too, when you find out that Miami only made 12 two-pointers in this game.
Oh, wow.
Fewest in franchise history.
Wow.
That's crazy. So it was always, mostly coming at the line or from three-point land. Wild game. But Jim and Bam, they took over in this game because it wasn't pretty. But there was a big stretch where those guys did all the scoring until sort of Hero that hit a jumper in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, Jimmy back in there helping the Heat, getting some of these much-needed victories, like Lili said. Final one. The Dallas Mavericks, guys, have stopped playing the national anthem before home games and do not plan to resume the tradition to play the anthem before games in the future. Mark Cuban made the decision after consulting with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. So, Lili, I think you might be happy about this, because I know you've talked about this in the past, but true or falsely, other teams are going to follow Cuban's lead here and stop playing the national anthem before games.
True, and I hope it happens very soon too. I really think this is completely unnecessary to have the anthem before every single game. They used to play the anthem before every game at Summer League. You remember that when we were out there Vegas? It was like before Summer League games. It's just not necessary. You just don't need it. Maybe once at the start of the season, maybe once at the start of the finals, you can have the anthem. Other than that, it's not necessary. We know that it causes a lot of tension between some people who think you should be standing, other people like to kneel because of what it symbolizes. I think just get rid of it. It's not needed. And I think now that Mark Cuban's done this sort of very quietly too. It was only just picked up here by our own Tim Cato here at The Athletic, who had the scoop first there when he noticed it wasn't played on Monday night. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great. And I would like to see other teams certainly do the same, follow suit here as what the Mavericks have done, and just drop it. I just don't think you need it at all.
What do you think, Trey?
I'm with Lee. You definitely don't need it. I don't see every team following Cuban's lead here and eliminating the national anthem. But like y'all are both saying, nobody even noticed that this was gone until 13 games into the season. The national anthem isn't on TV every single night for every single game. It is not an essential part of the production. It's going to be up to teams if they decide to play it or not. The only people who are going to be mad are people who want to be mad at it. And they're going to be mad at that kind of stuff no matter what. So to me, it's completely unnecessary, unless it's an international competition. I guess maybe you could make an exception when American teams are playing up in Toronto. Obviously, that's not happening this year, but You definitely don't need it, so I would not be surprised if other teams follow his lead, but probably not all of them. Some teams are going to choose to continue playing the national anthem, and sure, fine. I guess that's okay, too.
Right. Let's hear from the stream team on that one. Listening to the podcast, tweet at us, at NoDunk, saying, do you think other teams will follow Cuban's lead here and maybe stop playing the national anthem? And also, I mean, I should point out, the NBA seems fine with it right now. They seem, you know, by all accounts, like, okay, we're in the middle of a pandemic. You guys are in complete control of whatever you want to do for your pregame, celebrations is the wrong word, but pregame festivities or whatever activities. But what will happen when we're back to quote unquote normal? And will the NBA be like, no, we're playing the national anthem? And then will we have an issue then? We'll see when we cross that bridge. What are you laughing about?
We're getting a few comments. Pretty good comments, actually, from the stream team here about, top five U2 songs, but Dan Israeli said they should play Uptown Girl before every game.
Okay, I could get on board with
that. Cool. Okay, cool.
Sure. I mean, honestly, why not?
Exactly. People at least get to sing along, get into it, have a bit of fun with it.
Okay. You can dance around a little bit. Maybe we just play The Cure, Isaac, every game, get a little depressed, you know? Why isn't anybody shimmying to this? Okay, the winds are a blowing, guys. We got some trade rumors. Rumor. Yeah, JD's all over it today, baby. Some rumors to address. First one, according to Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, the Toronto Raptors are one of several teams interested in center Andre Drummond. Drummond will be an unrestricted free agent this offseason. He has probably a limited trade market with 1 year left on that deal. And he just sort of came over, of course, from Detroit to Cleveland for a bag of beans, as we call it. So let's address this rumor. I'll get us started here, the Raptors angle specifically with them. Do the Raptors need a center that could grab some rebounds? Absolutely. It's not worked out well after losing Marc Gasol. Answer Jabaka, though Bainesy's turned it on a little bit here as of late. He has found his footing a little bit. But could they use him, Drummond? Yes. The thing is, though, I just cannot figure out a trade that makes any sense for the Raptors to acquire Drummond. In fact, I think their best bet is the potential of a buyout market if the Cavs and Drummond elect to part ways here, that maybe then they add him. Because unless you get a third team involved, Lili, and probably it would involve Kyle Lowry going to said third team, it's a tough deal to try and make happen because of the money that Drummond makes. The Raptors are not including Siakam or Van Vliet or OG in any Andre Drummond deal. So to make the books work, you're talking, Norman Powell. Okay, I could see the Cavs actually having some interest maybe in him. Probably Baines, Pat McCaw, and Matt Thomas. We're like four guys to even get there. And the Cavs are not going to keep all of those guys. It's just weird. A third team, maybe a fourth team even, would have to get in the mix here, and then maybe you have something. But I just don't really ultimately seeing this happen by way of a trade. Again, bio market, possibly. There'd be a bit of a role for Drummond. He maybe would be interested in joining the Raps and having, the minutes and the opportunity on a good team. But otherwise, I don't see a trade that can be done. What do you think, Lee?
Yeah, that's always the toughest thing. When you've got a guy who's just earning so much money, I mean, do the Raptors want to give up all those minor assets just to acquire him? I guess they would obviously have to give up Baines as well just to give him some room there. But, if long-term, he's only 27, Andre Drummond. If the Raptors think long-term he could be something they want to keep on their team, then perhaps. But even still, when you're paying the big money to Siakam and Van Vliet, and OG just got paid as well, I'm not sure how much cap space they would have even to sign Drummond to an extension there. So a few little issues. But also the Cavs, I mean, I know they've cooled off a little bit, but they're playing probably better than they expected so far this season. I'm just not sure they're ready to just sort of, considering where they've been, that they would just give up on this season anyway and say, well, let's just, get trade him for pennies on the dollar anyway. May as well ride it out while you can with him, I think, just for now. And if things happen and you don't trade him by the deadline, then perhaps you want to buy him out after that if the Cavs season continues to go south. But I just can't see how it really fits with the Raptors. I mean, again, unless they give up Kyle Lowry, which I just don't think Masai Ujiri would do, I'm just not sure that there is a fit there contractually in the trade machine to make it work.
Trey, thoughts on this Drummond rumor to the Raps specifically?
I do think that the Cavs are going to end up being sellers here. They've lost 6 of 7. The schedule is really hard right now. They have outperformed expectations, but it's a smart move to move a guy like Drummond for something at the deadline, especially once you've already made the move for Jared Allen. You're likely center of the future, certainly more on the timeline with Okoro and Sexton and Garland. So I do think Drummond is going to be on the market, which makes it tough for the Raptors because, like you're saying, if I'm the Raptors, I do that depth pieces and picks trade for Drummond in a second. Like, you'll miss the creation that Norman Powell gives you, no doubt about it. But all those other guys, you're basically, that's a bag of beans again right there. Yep, unless you're throwing in a pick. But I don't think that the Cavs would do that. Right. I think the Cavs are the ones saying no there because they're going to be able to squeeze some teams for Andre Drummond because I do think he's going to be in contention or a hot name at the deadline because you look at the best teams in the league right now. It's the Lakers who crush it inside. It's the Sixers who have a massive guy in Joel Embiid inside. It's Giannis inside as well. You need a big guy to compete right now. I don't know that Andre Drummond is necessarily the most lockdown defender as a center. I don't know that he's a great rim protector, but he cleans the glass and he's literally big, which helps. So he's going to be in demand. JaVale McGee is going to be in demand, but I don't think that the Raptors have enough to offer the Cavs that's going to beat some other offers that are going to be out there eventually. That being said, the Raptors need to improve their center spot. They're 21st in defensive rebounding rate. That's where Drummond would be a massive improvement.
Yeah, it's like, it's just how much do you want to give up for a guy that you maybe can't even play in a close game, you know, down the stretch because of, you know, issues at the line and what he, you know, he obviously cleans up the glass, but I'm with you, Trey. He's not an elite defender, rim defender and stuff like that. He has limitations, of course. Teams would elect to leave him, I think, at times in a close game. Yeah, you don't want to mortgage the future or anything like that. And then, he's going to be looking for a payday, too. So that's the fascinating part with him. So the rumor's out there. KOC, he's plugged in. He knows what's going on, but we will see. Next one, sticking with him. Tell me if you've heard this before, guys. Danny Ainge and the Celtics may look to shuffle their roster ahead of this season's NBA trade deadline. Yeah, according to KOC, guys plugged in, man. League sources have long said Boston is searching for upgrades to bolster its wing and big man position. KOC added that multiple executives around the league believe the Celtics are up to something. So Trey, Celtics, possibly looking for a wing, big man. Do you have anything in mind? Do you believe this, what KOC is reporting? Where you go with this one?
Yeah, I got a scoop for you. The Celtics are going to try to be active, and they're going to come very close to acquiring all the big names. Very, very close. But they do need a big guy. Their competition in the Eastern Conference, it's Embiid, it's Giannis. Good luck finding somebody to guard them on the trade market. Obviously, Drummond could, I guess, work his way here if there's a buyout or a whole bunch of pieces thrown into the mix here. There are some other options, though. If Orlando decides to be a seller, could the Celtics be interested in Vucevic? That's a guy I would maybe consider. I mean, I don't know that he's slowing down Embiid and Giannis, but he's a solid big guy. He's a 20-10 kind of guy. I could see if the Magic decide it's over, we got to completely start rebuilding. That's fair. Some other guys I would take a look at if I'm Danny Ainge, lower on the totem pole. Jonas Valanciunas there in Memphis just had a humongous game. Steven Adams in New Orleans. I don't know if you consider PJ Tucker a big guy.
He's 100%. Kind of I love that mix. One.
Yeah, sure. I do too. PJ Tucker is fair, and I think he would be very good on the Celtics, but I don't think he necessarily addresses the problems they would have with Embiid and Giannis. I mean, he's still giving up 6 inches to those guys.
Yeah, he is, but I love it. I mean, I just love the idea of having basically the bigger version of Marcus Smart in the front court version of Marcus Smart on the same team. I like him. I mean, it's obviously I would be a super aggressive. I think if I'm the Nets too, I'm trying anything to get PJ Tucker. But I hear you. He's still obviously a much smaller guy than those Giants that you're saying. Celtics got some things to work with here. I know we make fun of Danny Ainge, but maybe not ultimately doing anything with them, Lee, but they have a $28.5 million player exception, the largest in NBA history. They have all of their future first round picks, and they do have some prospects that they've guys they've drafted that haven't, you know, obviously been around for a long time in Langford and Neesmith and stuff like that. So they could put something together, I think, to go get one of these wings or big mans. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, Vucevic maybe not, but I think they could get Aaron Gordon then from the Orlando Magic as a wing perimeter guy. He's not quite the sort of centerpiece that perhaps they're looking for, but an athletic guy, another one to sort of pair along with Jalen and Jason there might help them. Just get that guy out there and say, listen, we need you out here to defend and you know, run the floor. He's athletic. So yeah. I think he's definitely available anyway. I think the Magic would be more than happy to make a trade. And if they could do it with that trade exception, then you know, then the Celtics wouldn't have to give up, you know, necessarily any of their young pieces back in return. So there's a few options out there, but it is always funny when the Celtics are rumored to be considering a move because more often than not, it's like it just didn't quite work for them. You know, they want everything. Danny Ainge, I respect the fact that Danny Ainge always just wants everything in return for, you know, a pittance from what he'd have to give up to get those players or those draft picks. So he tries, doesn't always work.
Final one, Bleacher Report's Jake Fisher. He reported on Monday that a cohort in the Clippers front office is ready to move on from Patrick Beverley. Fisher also noted that the Clippers have made it widely known that former Sixth Man of the Year winner Lou Williams, Sweet Lou, is available as well. So Beverley and Lou Williams, if you want them, Lee, you can go and get them from the Clips. What do you think?
Well, I'm not surprised that Beverley's available. I think the Clippers would be happy to move on from him. He's injured right now. But Lou Williams is a bit of a surprise. But he's having a pretty bad season, actually, Lou Williams. His minutes are down, really significantly down, to only 20 a game. And therefore, his scoring is down as well, down to 10 points a game, which is very, very low for Lou Williams. He hasn't been that low since he was back with the Atlanta Hawks back 7 seasons ago. So I thought Lou Williams, remember a couple of seasons ago when they pushed the Warriors, they took 2 games off the Warriors in the first round. He was awesome. And I think he's so important to them coming off the bench. He's a leader. He's a scorer. But it almost feels like... you know, he wasn't really very good down in the bubble either, and he spoke out about what he saw from Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So I think he's almost just a holdover from that former era, the Clippers, and he's probably looking for a new destination as well. And I think the Clippers are sort of showing that as well by playing him less. So I think you can get both of them. I think Patrick Beverley, I don't really know what his value is. I mean, he has those games where sometimes he's very good defensively and he can be the 3-and-D guy, but there are other games where, you know, too many silly fouls. He's always fighting with the refs, and I'm not sure that he brings all that much value actually out on the court. I mean, he likes to talk it up. He likes to get into the scraps with the other teammate, the other opponents, but I'm not sure it's actually that effective. So I think you can get Patrick Beverley pretty easily. I think you could get Lou Williams, but it'd cost you a little bit more. And I think he still has something to offer a team as well. Coming off the bench, we know he can still score. It's just he's not doing it right now for the Clippers.
You're higher on Lou Williams than Patrick Beverley at this point in their careers. That's a little interesting to me.
I mean, but what do you really get out of Beverley? I just...
Well, we know what you get out of him. You know a guy that's going to play at least hard defensively and he's hit a three-point shot. I mean, Lou is getting a little washed at this point, if I'm being honest.
He's
never a great defender, and now when he can't score all that well, then he's basically a nothing player.
Yeah, but is it that he can't score or the Clippers are just kind of phasing him out? I still wouldn't. I mean, Lou Williams at the end of the game, I'd still rather have him on the court than Patrick Beverley. I mean, obviously, yes, Patrick Beverley, a more intense defender. Lou's not a great defender, but... Big Lou's going to hit some shots still, I think. But I think they're both probably on their way by the looks of it.
Well, as we've talked about before, the Clippers would love to get their hands on a Kyle Lowry, I think, and plug him in as their point guard in a playoff run. I don't think Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Zubats? What else you got to throw in there to make
it
happen?
Well, they got no draft picks either.
So. Yeah, no picks. Like, don't see Masai Ujiri wanting to do that. Trey, what do you think, though, of rumors, at least, of Beverley and Sweet Lou being available?
I buy it.
Yeah.
Since the summer, the story around the Clippers has been that they want another point guard who can create and set up their stars in Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And it has been Kyle Lowry has been the name rumored. It's obviously hard to get him there to the Clippers because of the moves they've made in the past. But they've been wanting to upgrade their point guard position for a long time. They brought in Reggie Jackson last season. He seems to be getting the bulk of the minutes now. Beverley and Lou Williams both seem to be almost part of the old Clippers at this point, with the way things went down at the end of last season with Doc Rivers leaving to the Sixers. It kind of felt like perhaps LA was moving on, and maybe that will be the case here because, like Lee's saying, they both can be effective in their roles. I think Patrick Beverley kind of gives a little bit more fuel to the opponents sometimes. I think having him out there can be a benefit to your team if he's trying to get you riled up and he takes himself out of the game. I think that happens a lot. Lou has been struggling. Maybe if they're playing on a team where they have bigger roles, more important roles, they're able to reinvigorate their careers and give some team a little bit of a playoff push or something like that. But the Clippers could certainly upgrade over those two guys, upgrade over Reggie Jackson. I wouldn't be surprised to see him make a move for another guard out there, but they're still going to need a big guy inside. So I wouldn't necessarily want to put Zubac in the trade. He's going to be a player that some teams are interested in if the Clippers are trying to make a move, but yeah. You got to have somebody big who's going to handle Nikola Jokic, who's going to try and guard Anthony Davis, who's going to give you a little bit of oomph inside. Serge is an offensive player at this point in his career. He can help you defensively, but they need a couple of little pieces here. So, yeah, moving Patrick Beverley, moving Lou Williams, maybe that's a way to improve your team.
All right. Well, if you see a juicy NBA trade rumor you want us to address, let us know, of course. Tweet them in at NoDunksInc or email them in, NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. Okay. Got a fun little top five for you in a second here. But first, a final word from our sponsors. All right. As everybody knows, yesterday was International Greg Day. So happy belated Greg Day to everyone out there. Stream Team threw one hell of a Greg Day party yesterday. They ate Greg eggs, tapped the beer. Tapped the beer Greg's is what I meant to say. Okay. Yeah. This had a grand old Greg time, really. Really fun stuff. So to honor the big day, even if I am a day late and a Greg short, I thought we could celebrate our top five NBA Greg's. Hit the music, JD.
Top five.
Yes, my top five NBA Greg's to celebrate International Greg Day, which of course was yesterday. At number five, it's Greg Ostertag. 00. Played 11 NBA seasons, almost all of them with the Utah Jazz, and you would know that just by looking at him. He led the playoffs in total blocks and fouls one postseason. Nice. Shaq, I think, once slapped him. If anybody
yep,
remembers
that's right.
That. Yeah, so there he is, big old Greg Ostertag.
Man, a haircut you could set your watch to.
That's right. That's right. Okay, at number four, it's Greg Oden. Mm. Yeah, number one pick in 2007. Honestly, he's got one of the most depressing basketball reference pages you'll ever see. He played just over 100 games, and it features like four did not play injury knee seasons like on that page. You want to know something even crazier? Greg Oden just turned 33.
Wow.
Man, that is wild. Number three, it's Greg Monroe.
Hmm.
Yeah, Moose. Big guy played for the Pistons and the Bucks and the Suns and the Celtics and the Raptors. He was all rookie in 2010-11. And his best year probably was his final season with the Pistons when he averaged 16-10. The Moose made $75 million over his career.
Whoa. So,
yeah, not bad. That actually shocked me. I didn't think it would be that high. So
he was like the number one free agent one year, yes. Right? When yes. He signed with the Bucks, it was like, whoa, the Bucks are back. They got Greg Monroe.
That's right. Yep. At number two, over the guard, Greg Anthony. Yeah, former Knicks point guard, 12th pick of the 91 draft. The Grizzlies' first pick, if you remember this, in the expansion draft, and his best season there was in Vancouver. He averaged 14-7, got a lot of minutes there, joining the expansion Grizzlies. He's obviously an analyst now, and he's the father of NBA rookie Cole Anthony. Unfortunately, Greg Anthony didn't name Cole Anthony Greg 2, because that would have been really great. But number one on our NBA Greg's, come on, it's obvious. Yeah. It's Greg Popovich. A Greg so Greg, he put two G's in it. One of the Greggest and greatest coaches of all time, the ultimate Greg, we raise a glass of vino to Greg Popovich. So, apologies to Greg Steemsma, Cadillac Greg Anderson, 78 Bullets champ Greg Ballard, Greg Buckner, and two-time NBA champ and inventor of a wonderful children's toy, Greg Kite. So there are top five Gregs. Did I miss anyone? I mean, I was almost had Steemsma in there. I had to go with Ostertag. I was a big...
The original Greg Steemsma is Ostertag, I think. No, I think you nailed it. I think those are the top Gregs, and you honestly blew my mind putting Greg Popovich number one. The last G in his name, you think that stands for Greg as well? So he's Greg?
I hope so. I hope somebody asks him that, that's for sure. Okay.
He would love to be asked that question, exactly. Surely, during a game.
Yeah. Okay, pick 'em results from last night. It was the Philly-Sacktown game. Philly was favored by 5.5, and they got it done in the end. They won by, what did they win by? 8, right? 119-111, I think it was, in the end, final score. So, I had that right. Trey had that right. Tass had that right. Lili, yeah, you pre-swerved on that one. You had the Kings. You got the L, and you're 2-5 now. Trey, we thought, was having, like, the... Well, he was technically having the worst month you could possibly have, starting 0-5. You guys are tied now in last place at 2-5. Tass is 3-4. I'm 4-3. Tonight's game, Cleveland in Denver. We got a big line here. We don't have these big lines usually, but Denver favored by 9.5. So Trey, we'll go to you first. Who do you like in the Cavs-Nuggets game tonight?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one, but who cares? I'm going Lee Ellis on this one. No, it's strange to see such a big line. Both teams are really struggling. Both teams need a win, but oof, that's a big line. Give me the Nuggets. I think I'm going to go with the Nuggets on this one. I don't know. They need a win more. They okay. need to win more, and they're going to want it 11 points worth, 10 points worth even.
Okay, okay. Lele, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going the same. I think the Nuggets have just got too much. The Cavs just struggling a little bit. I mean, the Nuggets almost have to win this one convincingly. They just need a good win, so I'll take the 10-point Nuggets victory.
Okay, my gut says Tass is going to agree with you guys, which means I would love to swerve. I would love the opportunity to swerve on everyone here. So I'll take the Cavs plus 9.5. But let's find out who Tass is ultimately picking.
Ooh, this is a tough one. Both teams need a win. But I'm not a Cavs believer like Lee is. So give me the Nuggets. Blowout.
Yes. I think he thought I was going to swerve then.
Nice yes. Swerve. Nice swerve.
Oh, I'm happy with this. I'm very happy with this. I'm the only one taking Cleveland. Plus 9.5. Everybody else has Denver winning that game by 10 points or more. So good luck. All right, yeah, no tweet of the night. We did the top five Gregs instead. It was a really fun show, though. Packed a lot in there. We'll be back to Step on the Beach later today, 3 p.m. Eastern, live on YouTube, if you want to join us, as we hit the beach to answer your emails and your questions and your comments. Always a fun show. If you just listen to the podcast, that's fine. It'll drop in your podcast feed later today. Continue to like, comment, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. We hit that 30,000K mark. Now we go for 40K. Yes, indeed. Grab your No Dunks merch at nodunks.com. Speaking of merch, Trey, I see, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe you're wearing a Carhartt sort of crew neck there today.
That's right.
Confirmed, I wasn't dreaming that those NBA Carhartt hats do exist. I saw you tweeting about them. A lot of people responded to me and like, oh, here it is. They look pretty cool.
Yep. Got one in the mail, buddy.
Wow, you already bought one.
Well, Sally Kirby coming through. I got a birthday coming this month. I said, Mama, I need a new hat. I need a new hat. All my friends on the internet say these are very cozy. Mommy, we call our podcast the Classic Factory, and I need to wear a Carhartt hard hat.
That's honestly incredible. You know, I sometimes think my mom loves me, and then I realize, no, not nearly as much as Sally Kirby loves her Trey Kirby. Oh, my God. I love it. Okay, so I can't wait to see the hat. Which one did you end up going with? Because I know there's, like, three different styles or something like that.
Yeah, I went with the cleanup. I went with the cleanup here, which I think is the unstructured dad hat with a fabric bat.
Okay.
The MVP is the structured dad hat with the Velcro strap. And then there, I forget what the flat bill,
okay.
like a large crown one is called. That one looked the most like a hard hat. So I was yeah. a little interested in that, but I had to ultimately go dad with it.
Okay. Lee, if you were to get one with an NBA logo on it, these Carhartt hats, which I can't believe are a real thing, which team would you go with?
Well, wouldn't I just get the NBA logo? Just the
like Rob Lowe?
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wasn't that Rob Lowe, right? At a football
game? Yeah, for the NFL one. Yeah, that's right.
Looked like an official up there.
Yeah.
I guess you would. You would just get an NBA one. Okay.
They had them for the NHL, and there was one that was just celebrating the original six teams. I love that one. I just like the first six teams, and that's it.
It's been all downhill since then. Let's be honest. All right, guys, we'll call it there. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, subscribe to The Athletic if you haven't done that already. $3.99 a month right now. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks and you get the best damn sports writing in the world, and you get all these podcasts ad-free, part of the Athletic podcast universe. Okay, we'll see you later today. Thanks again, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, when Lee swerves in the pick and payoff, he's Swervis Ellison. Thanks to Ziggy Starfox for that one.
Embrace the day, people.